about you?
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
A little bit tired. Had that company all day and fed them and, you know, cooked and fed them. And they left about 7:30.
I can relate to that.
Randy.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to reach somebody on the Ubu, so doesn't look like he's picking up. Hello? Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa.
Good
Shabbatenu Kabel, Shmaya Kabel, Yo Kabel,
10:45, Saudi Yitzhak. And the 8th verse, we say in a whisper.
Baruch Shem Kavod, Malkucho, Alam Ba'ed.
Now, from the Parashat Korah, section 12, to set aside tithe. Verse 52. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kananeihu. The Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh of the numerical value of 63, which is Yud-Vav-Dalet-Heh-Yud, Vav-Aleph-Vav-Heh-Yud, is the secret of Ima, which is left in relation to Abba, who is Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh of the numerical value of 72. Since 72 and 63 are right and left, it is 3/10 measures shall you offer for a bullock. That is the 3 yuds of the name of the full spelling of 63, called the 3/10 measures. This is said of an ox because it is of that side about which it is said, and they 4 had the face of an ox on the left side. That is Giburah, meaning the left column, a 10th measure for one lamb. That totals 10 letters, Yud Vav Dalet Hey Aleph Vav Aleph Vav Hey Aleph, and that is a 10th measure, meaning one Yud. The 10 letters, and these 10 letters amount numerically to Mem Hey, 45, and Mem Hey is 100, as explained above, where it was explained that Mem Hey is cognate to Me'ah, which means 100 in Hebrew. And also, when you exchange the letters of Mem Hey in the Atdash substitution, they become Tzadi and Yud. The numerical value of Tzadi and Yud is 100. From this, we get the idea that we need to be saying 100 blessings per day. Are there any questions? Okay, tonight's class is the first of our advanced classes that are taught to new students. The handout is available on the Yeshem.com website, www.yeshem.com/Kabbalah, spelled K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, hyphen, the number 4, hyphen, the word phases, P-H-A-S-E-S, hyphen, the number 1, dot H-T-M. I will be reading from this handout, and yet I'll be adding to it and expanding upon it. This is because this subject is extremely esoteric, and there's a lot of material that needs to be expressed, but it isn't appropriate to be putting it into writing because writing lowers the material. It's different levels of consciousness, writing versus speaking, and understanding things versus knowing things. Mostly you won't understand what I just said, and I don't blame you, I don't expect you to, but by the end of tonight we will have a better sense of what I mean. This is the first advanced class that I teach to new students. Students who have completed the basic class. This series of classes introduce the Tree of Life and the Tree of Life glyph. I'm getting static to change the controls. If you have a question, and I hope you will have a question in this class, if you have a question, press *6, and I should be able to hear you. If I'm not responding to you, it may be because I'm not hearing you, in which case, please write the question down. It's important that it be asked. This is very much an interactive class. I mentioned the word glyph just before I changed the controls. A glyph, most people don't know what that means, but it's a diagram. It's more than a diagram, as we'll come to understand. It is one of the most important classes you will ever study in your career, in your study of Kabbalah. Many of you have seen the Tree of Life glyph, or the diagram of the Tree of Life. What you may not realize is that many of these diagrams have become corrupted over the centuries. Most of them do not have the Hebrew letters connected to the lines on the glyph. This is because there is a machloket, a disagreement, a search for truth between the sages over which letters go with which lines. Rabbi Ashlag teaches that it is the best not to use a diagram when studying the tree, since the diagram is a two-dimensional depiction and the tree is a 10-dimensional entity at a minimum. Some say it has infinite dimensions. Using a diagram will lead you to some corrupted understandings. This is a true statement. Please remember that you are to never believe a word I say. You are not requested to try what I say. You are requested to try what I ask you to try. If you find it necessary to utilize the glyph or the diagram, and most people do, then please ask me, or better yet, email me an attachment of which tree you have chosen to use so that I can make sure the one you have chosen will be adequate and not corrupted. Please consider the words of the Torah that describe the two trees in the Garden of Eden. In chapter 2, verses 16, God said, "Do not eat from the tree that is in the center of the garden, from the tree of knowledge of good and evil." In chapter 3, verse 22, paraphrasing, God said that man was now like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not reach out his hand and eat from the tree of life. Where in the garden is the tree of life? The Torah doesn't tell us. Why is the tree of knowledge in the middle of the garden? What is the difference between the two trees? These are rhetorical questions that need to be contemplated. You need to arrive at an answer that works for you. If you don't arrive at an answer, you're going to limit your growth in the study of Kabbalah. There is no right answer or wrong answer to these questions, but there needs to be an answer for you. Some sages teach that the two trees are actually one tree. The tree of knowledge consists of the lower seven sephirot, while the tree of life consists of the three upper sephirot. From this teaching, it is implied that the tree was supposed to be eaten, just not until Shabbat. Do you agree with this teaching? Remember, there's no right or wrong to the answer you arrive at to these questions. I'm now going to give you a description of the Tree of Life in words. I will adhere closely to what's written here, so you don't need to be taking notes. In fact, close your eyes. Relax your bodies. Let the tension flow out of your muscles and other parts of your bodies. Listen to the words I am about to say. Try to visualize these words in at least three, or better yet, four dimensions, whatever that means of a four-dimensional picture to you. As you develop your visualization of your tree, if there is anything you do not understand, please make yourself a note and ask me after the description is complete. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I hear you. The tree of life is called a tree since it has roots, branches, and fruits. It is upside down compared to our world. The root is at the top, and the fruit is at the bottom, hanging down. Where in our world, the root is at the bottom, and the fruit is at the end of the branches, which is considered the top of the tree. But on many trees, the fruit is also hanging down, even in our world. The tree consists of three trunks, which are called columns. The middle column consists of a mixture of aspects of the other two columns. There is a right column called the Pillar of Wisdom. This is also called the Sharing Column. There is also a left column called the Pillar of Understanding. This is also referred to as the Receiving Column. The tree is both a stage and a process. The stages are called Sephirot, and the process are communication lines between the stages. They may also be communication directly between aspects of the communication channels themselves. There are 10 sephirot in the shape of a duahedron. The sephirot are at the intersection of the lines that form the duahedron. The shape of a duahedron provides for three parallel lines. It also leaves 7 vertical lines and 12 diagonal lines. This is in a two-dimensional drawing. In a three-dimensional drawing, there are more lines. Yet the two-dimensional drawing is incomplete. The additional lines have the same letters as what appears in the two-dimensional line, but not necessarily in the same places. The 10 sephirot are not separate. They are one. There's not 10, there's one. And yet there's 10. Each one gives birth to the one below it, in the idea of a straight line, one causing the other to appear. There is no time, there is only cause and effect. One Sephiroth causes another Sephiroth to appear. That is not first one and then the other. That is both at the same instant. Yet one is a cause and one is an effect. At the same instant, they are both a straight line and in a set of three. At the same moment, they are 10 distinct consciousnesses, and they are also one unified whole consciousness. As they transfer energy between themselves, there is never any lack of communication. The lower two sets of three are called ends, since there is no continuity within them. Just as the ten are a unified whole, as unity, as oneness. The same is true for the six ends. They are six, and yet they are one. The ten Sephiroth can be viewed as three sets of three, with one below. The three sets of three, there is a head, followed by a body, followed by an end, leading to the single end. The head is called Rosh. The body or the middle is called Tosh. The end is called Sof. Each set of three has one from the sharing pillar, one from the receiving pillar, and one that connects the two pillars in a form of balance. The Kabbalists have used different metaphors to help explain the essence of the Sephiroth. One metaphor is the four letters of the Tetragrammaton. Another metaphor is the names that they have called the Sephiroth over the generations. A third metaphor is the creative process and how the Sephiroth are both stages and process at the same moment. The names of the Sephiroth have changed over time. We will begin to give you names. They will not be complete. I'm only going to give you three names tonight. Also, the relationships within the metaphors and some additional information about the Sephiroth tonight. In the balance of the classes for this series of classes, names will be added as part of our understanding. Tonight it would just confuse you. I'm now going to give you some names. I'm going to give you some ideas of the meaning within those names. Keter means crown. Keter is outside the body. When a king takes off his crown, he does not truly change internally. Yet people treat him differently since his trappings have been removed. Keter is the will. Keter is the hidden potential. Keter is our pre-conscious motivation. the reverse spelling of the word keter in Hebrew means to weld or to solder. Welding is a form of joining, of fusing, of creating unity. The tip of the yud is a metaphor that describes the keter. It is not even part of the four phases, since from the lower perspective, looking up, keter looks like the endless world. From our perspective, it looks like it is difficult to see the difference between keter and the endless. Keter is the skull in our body. Chachma equals wisdom. The Hebrew spelling breaks into two words that mean power, koach, and what, ma. Koach ma, chachma. This means what is the power, or it can also mean the power of what. The germ of an idea is chachma. A flash of insight is chachma. Inspiration and imagination is chachma. The eyes in our body is chachma. Chachma is phase one of the four phases. Chachma is the yud of the tetragrammaton. Usually referred to as your unconscious, which is meant eventually to become revealed and expanded to be your conscious. It is considered concealed until it becomes conscious. It is the concept of running and returning, which is a Kabbalistic concept that is too long to discuss here, but that will be taught extensively in the Sefer Yetzirah class that happens Monday morning. Bina translates as understanding. It also means mother. Bina is analyzing. Bina is feasibility studies. Bina is nurturing and also gestation. Bina is phase two. Bina is the upper hay of the tetragrammaton. Bina is the ears in the frame of the body. Bina is our conscious level, as opposed to our unconscious level. Running and returning is a concept that works with Bina, as part of Bina. It is paired with Chachma. Keter, Chachma, and Bina are referred to as the Gimel Rishonot, which translates as the first three. This means that the three are always in zivug. They're always in unity. Two of them, Chachma and Bina, are always in sexual union, sexual intercourse. Keter is always surrounding them. You can open your minds, your eyes again. You can come out of your meditation wherever you went. You can understand what I've just described. It's recommended that you listen to the recording. It's recommended that you go through this visualization many, many times. Each time you may see the tree differently. Each time you may not see the tree at all. If you limit yourself to your understanding of the two-dimensional glyph, I'm trying to break you out of that mold. That mold of intellect. This is not an intellectual exercise. This will expand your consciousness more effectively and without the side effects of drugs. But it takes work. It doesn't happen on day one. The next section, I'm going to talk about the four phases, but in a general sense. The four phases was taught by Rabbi Ashlag. It is the most important revelation of light within Kabbalah since the last 300 years, since the Baal Shem Tov revealed what he revealed, his revelations. Since he taught us that along with this concept of relativity, any creative process must follow these four steps. These four steps are called four phases. These four steps consist of phase one. Phase one means, vessel, would you reveal me? Spoken by the light. The vessel says, sure, I will reveal you. You asked me. It's not an effort for me to reveal you. Come on in. I will reveal you. This is phase one. Phase two is when the vessel takes on the consciousness of what fulfills it. Just like a teacup gets warm when it's filled with hot water and cold when it's filled with ice. What fulfills shares its essence. The vessel takes on that attribute. When it takes on that attribute, it changes its consciousness from I want to be revealed to, or from I will reveal you, it becomes I want to share. This is a different consciousness, meaning it's a different vessel. Meaning, phase one does not disappear. Phase two is added to phase one. Phase one is the cause for phase two. The four phases is a metaphorical understanding of the Sephirot. Actually, I didn't explain to you phases three and phases four. I'm holding that until later classes in this series. The four phases is a metaphorical understanding of the Sephirot and also the creative process and also the Tetragrammaton itself. The Tetragrammaton would be translated, if we were to ever translate it to words, translate the word Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, if we were to ever translate the meaning and think that that is the essence of the thing, the Tetragrammaton would be translated as active being, active essence. Active vessel. The four phases are an amazing revelation, as you will, I hope, come to realize and come to share my awe at Rabbi Ashlag's intellect and Rabbi Ashlag's perception. The light has a thought to be revealed. It is not a desire to be revealed, since desire does not exist yet. Desire doesn't come into being until phase four is reached, as you will come to see. The thought to be revealed created a vessel, but it's not a vessel because there's no desire in the vessel. The vessel that was created goes through a process. Whenever the consciousness of the vessel changes, the vessel changes to something additional. Yet there's no disappearance in the vessel. The four vessels exist, yet the first three vessels are not the same intensity as when they are the primary vessel, meaning when they are the active vessel. We're now going to start to discuss phase one. There is no coercion in spirituality. The light is required through its own rules to knock on the door of the vessel and ask permission to be revealed. It cannot just break down the door and come in and be revealed because it can force the vessel to do so. That's coercion. There cannot be coercion in spirituality. There shouldn't be coercion in physicality. The light says, please reveal me. And the vessel doesn't think about it, yet says, okay, I will reveal you. This is the essence. This is the consciousness of the vessel. It is not a desire yet. It is not a desire to reveal the light. It's a reaction to the request, please reveal me. Okay, it's no effort, not difficult. You ask me to reveal you, I'll reveal you. This establishes the consciousness of the vessel. It's okay, it's no effort, so I will do it. It is not sharing. It's not a desire. What do you think it is? It's not a lack because it does not know that it is not revealing the light at that moment. Until the light requests to be revealed, the vessel doesn't realize it's not revealing. So it's not a fulfillment. A fulfillment can only happen when there's a desire. Remember the light dilatsinsum at the moment of creation. It diminished itself by withdrawing into itself, which is, of course, impossible, since there's no place that the light does not exist. If it withdrew into itself, then where it doubled up, so to speak, it should be more intense. But that is impossible, because all aspects of the light are equal and unified. And there is no place for a greater intensity. There's no place for grades in the light. Phase one is the Yud. What is the nature of the Yud? It is a gematria of 10, which is made up of 1 and 0. So it implies multiples, yet its essence is unity. It is the smallest letter. It is a dot, yet a curve. These are things we need to spend some time contemplating. What is a curve? What is a dot? A dot is infinite. Picture a dot on a white piece of paper. Prior to the dot being placed on the paper, the white was infinite. And now it is limited by the dot. The dot is infinite and yet limited by the white space. These are paradoxes. What is a paradox? In mathematics, actually calculus, a paradox is two answers to an equation, two curved lines that answer the same equation. They both exist at the same instant, yet they are separated by some space between them. Where is the line in this that runs between them, that connects them? This is the first phase. This is the paradox. Let me repeat this in different ways with different emphasis. A dot is the still, small voice within you, which is the voice of God that you hear and don't hear. Can you go into the dot and expand the dot to take up all of the white space on the paper? Phase one is not desire. Phase one is not fulfilled by the light. Yet the light takes up space and time and velocity. And, etc., and, etc., and, etc. Phase one is a revelation of the light, because the light has a thought to be revealed. There is nothing else except light and vessel. Except the vessel is not a vessel, since it has no desire. It is a potential of a vessel, whatever that means. The thought of revelation and a place of revelation. The consciousness of phase one is okay. I will reveal you, since you want me to, and you created me. Is that payback for being created? No. Is it appreciation for being created? The answer is no. What is it? What does the communication look like between the fulfillment and the vessel that isn't a vessel we call phase one? What happens when you pour hot water into a teacup? The cup becomes warm. It takes on the attribute of the fulfillment. What is the attribute of the light of God? It is sharing. The non-vessel of phase one takes on the consciousness of the light of God, which is sharing. Yet it is not the same consciousness, since in spirituality, if something has the same consciousness, then it becomes the same thing. The light is different than the non-vessel, yet they are unified, which means there is an affinity of form. We need to discuss the concepts of form and content. A vessel is form. It shapes what is fulfilling it. The light, or the fulfillment, is content, is content. It's also content. Can there be different contents at this level? Can there be grades or levels within the content? If a bank account of $999,999 is called a non-vessel, since the bank account does not have the desire, the person who accumulated the money in the account has the desire. Is this account equal to a bank account of $5? Are they equal? They're both bank accounts. One has $5, one has almost $1 million. Is this a different level of consciousness? The consciousness comes from outside the non-vessel. Is this a grade? We need to understand what these things are in order to truly appreciate phase one and how it transforms to phase two. When the potential vessel takes on the attribute of the fulfillment, then there is an additional non-vessel. They have different potentials. They are not the same thing. This has now become phase two. Phase one has become phase two. What changed? They're the same vessel or the same non-vessel. What changed? What makes it phase two? This is the hay of the tetragrammaton as a metaphor. This is Bina as a metaphor. Phase two has a different consciousness than phase one. The consciousness of phase two is, I want to share. The consciousness of phase one is, okay, I will reveal you. It's not the same consciousness, therefore it's not the same vessel. Therefore it's not the same non-vessel. It changed. There are now two vessels, but they have different consciousnesses, meaning there's only one vessel. But we call them two, because we perceive a difference between, okay, I will reveal you, and I want to share. How did that take place? How did the consciousness change? Because the fulfillment is a cause of the change. Thank you. consciousness of phase two, I want to share. It is a different consciousness from phase one, which is the consciousness of I will reveal you. Does phase two have this consciousness? Yes, it has the consciousness of I want to share. Does it also have the consciousness of I will reveal you? Or are they two vessels? Is it two or is it one? It does have the consciousness of I want to share. It does have the consciousness of I will reveal you. This is the same idea that there are 10 Sephirot, but there's only one unified whole. It has the same consciousness, but it's not an active consciousness. Phase one's consciousness is inactive. It's there and it isn't there. It's like taking a rubber stamp, putting ink on the rubber stamp and putting that stamp on a piece of paper. Does the rubber stamp and the mark on the paper, is that the same thing? Do they show the exact same thing? The answer is yes. Are they both rubber stamps? No. One is a cause and the other is an effect. What is separates phase one from phase two? What is the operating concept? The language is similar but not exact, so let's talk about that language. I want to share doesn't say I will reveal you. I will reveal you has the word I in it, but is it really conscious and truly an I? Is there a difference in phase one between the fulfillment and the vessel? Okay, I will reveal you is not I want to share. Is revelation and sharing the same thing? At this level of consciousness, the answer is yes. For lack of a better ability to explain revelation and sharing, in English, we have to say, I will reveal you. I can't just say revealing. I can't say revealing without saying what's revealing, without putting the word I in front of it, or putting the word phase one is revealing it. But that's the limitation of the language. It's not a reflection of the consciousness. What is the difference between phase one and phase two? Phase one is revealing. Phase two has taken on the consciousness of the fulfillment. I want to share. Does the fulfillment, does God have an ego? Does God call himself I? The answer is in the Torah, he uses the word anochi, which we translate as I. It's different than the word ani by the letter kaf. Some people say it's by difference of kaf and vav. Kaf and vav is 26, but nowhere in the Torah is anochi spelled with a vav, which is an indication that anochi is not complete. It is not perfected. God is not perfected. We've all grown up with the consciousness that God is perfect. How can we say it's not perfect? This is a problem in the language, not a problem in God. The Torah existed 2,000 years before creation. The Torah did not have words in it until human beings activated the words, activated the letters to become words as they played out and lived out their lives. And the words came into existence. What was the cause of the words? Human beings. What was the cause of the letters? The Creator. What separates a human being from the Creator? What separates phase two from phase one? It's a simple answer. What separates phase two from phase one? What separates a human being from God is our egos. The word I is what separates us. Does anybody have any questions? And I'm going to change the controls back so that you can just speak out and we can have a conversation.
Welcome to the conference call, a service of www.freeconference.com. When you have entered... We received *7*7*7. If this is the code you intended to enter,
I'm going to be hanging up.
To enter your access code,
right,
please note that if you are using a
Does anybody have any questions or comments? I heard you, Ari. Anybody else on the conference call?
Yes.
Well, I like the way you took three at a time, so that gives us a chance to do the meditations and get away from the glyphs.
It's not my idea. I took it from Rabbi Ashlag, who was very clear not to use the glyphs. By the same token, most people find that they need the glyphs to at least to break, you know, to stay connected to the image. Hopefully you're able to perceive the tree without the glyph. But if you need it, you go ahead and use it.
The names I can do without. The letters I can't remember in between the names.
I understand. But that's where the disagreement in the sages is. Which letters go with which lines?
Oh, okay.
They have, in the two-dimensional glyph, there are three horizontal lines. There are seven vertical lines. And there are 12 diagonal lines. Lo and behold, when we get into the Sefer Yetzirah, we will find that there are three mother letters connected to the three horizontal lines. But which one goes where?
Mm-hmm.
There are seven vertical lines. There are seven double letters. But which one goes where? And there are 12 diagonal lines, 12 additional letters. 7 plus 12 plus 3 is 22. Oh, there's a reason there's 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet? Is there a reason there's 26 letters in the English alphabet? Is there a reason that there's an excess of a million diagrams in the alphabet of the Chinese language? And I will tell you my favorite diagram in the Chinese language. Just to give you an idea of what I mean when I say a diagram in the Chinese language. If you draw a picture of a house, and inside that house you put two women, that's clearly a diagram. That is a concept in the Chinese language. It's a concept in English. It's a concept in Hebrew. What is that concept? Trouble. A house with two women will create trouble in your life. Whether you're the woman, the other woman, or the man having to live in that environment. Or the children having to live in that environment. Maybe the children receive better care. But maybe they don't know how to relate. We're getting away from the four phases, but not really. Because the four phases is consciousness. And a house with two women is defining a form of consciousness. Trouble defines a form of consciousness. Nothing happens. Nothing is in this universe, in any of these universes, nothing is without consciousness. My heart has a consciousness to beat. my lungs have a consciousness to draw in air and expel air, some a different kind of air. An atom has the consciousness of a proton. Another part of the atom has a consciousness of the electron. And a third part of the atom has a consciousness of the neutron. Guess what happens when we break a neutron? We get the same number of protons and the same number of electrons. The nucleus has the same number of protons, the same number of electrons. Three columns. The proton we call sharing. The electron we call receiving. Why does the electron float around the nucleus? Because it is more active. Because it has a desire, and that desire causes it to move. And why is some electrons in the nucleus and some protons are in the nucleus? How do we understand this? The three columns of the tree. Is the nucleus of an atom real? Or is there only the protons in the nucleus that are real? These are questions science hasn't yet answered. The answer in the Kabbalah I could give you, but it would change how you will understand the four phases. It's a progression. You need to have to walk the first step on a stairwell to get to the top. You can't just jump to the top. Why not? Because your consciousness limits you. You don't think you can, so you can't. Are there any other questions? Remember, this is not understanding intellectually. If you try and understand this intellectually, God forbid, you will fail. Not because you want to fail, not because you're used to failing, God forbid. You will fail because the Klipa wants you to stay in the level of your conscious. It wants you to stay within the frame of what you know. But in order to grow, in order to excel, in order to become what you need to become, a child of God, you have to grow into your unconscious. But you can't stay there. We don't communicate in pictures. There are some people who can draw well. There are some computer programs that show the depictions. But for the majority of human beings, how do we motivate each other to do things? It's done with words. It's done with force, God forbid. Here is a different way. It's called running and returning. Run to your unconscious, get the flash, and bring it back to your logical, intuitive mind. Flesh it out. Run your feasibility studies. phases one and phases two. Are there any questions? Tomorrow night, we will be doing the 14th class of our Advanced Reincarnation Series. If you want to be caught up by listening to those recordings of the first 13 classes and you don't have them, send me an email and I'll provide them to you. I'll send you the links. They'll be up on the site within the next 3 or 4 days. Thursday night is a class, a Zohar class. Saturday night, this particular Saturday night, I cannot stress strongly enough, it's Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. You need to understand the energy of Tammuz. Lacking that understanding is at your own peril. A simple question. Somebody gets cancer of something. Cancer of the arm, cancer of the leg, cancer of the uterus, cancer of the breast, cancer of the brain, cancer of the colon. Somebody gets cancer. When did that cancer enter their body? Nobody's going to give me an answer. If you ask a professional, go ahead.
Well, I've heard you say it before in another class. I didn't know if you wanted us to answer.
It isn't necessary, but go ahead and answer. What do you think you heard me say?
Tammuz.
In Tammuz.
I'm listening.
Tammuz.
Yeah, Tammuz. Not Tammuz. When does cancer start? Are you telling me that the cancer starts in Tammuz?
Well, I think that's what we heard.
Yes.
From Saturday night. Yes, it's late.
What time?
It's at 10 p.m. Saturday night. It's late, and I apologize for that. But it's Motzi Shabbat. In San Francisco, Shabbat doesn't end until 9:30. So it's the earliest that I could do it, keeping within the energy. We need to hear it. We need to control energy of Tammuz. To lack, to not make that attempt is at your own peril, God forbid. I'm not trying to frighten you. I'm speaking to you about simple cause and effect. You have the opportunity to protect yourself. Either utilize it or don't. That's what free choice is about. It's not about being frightened. It's about using the tools.
Mm-hmm.
We will discuss Motzi Shabbat, about Tammuz, and about when cancers start. And what you heard, and what you think you heard. We will discuss that. Because in order to use the tools, you have to understand then what you hear is part of the illusion. It's part of the paradox.
Well, aren't the cells in our body all the time? It's just when our immune system goes down, then they activate.
Isn't that what the science tells you?
That's what science knows.
That is what science tells you.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough.
That is what current theory of doctors tells us. Is it accurate?
No.
Why do you think cells turn dark? Why do you think cells on an X-ray are black, meaning that they're cancer cells? Why do you think that the cells that the cells the doctors are talking about become black and go out of the body? The immune system works. Why is that?
Well, probably something we did. We're always involved.
You are seeing the exact manifestation of the phrase desire to receive for oneself alone.
Oneself alone.
The reason it's black is that all of the X-rays are absorbed by that cell. And so, therefore, it reflects black onto the X-ray film. Next Sunday morning, we will be teaching you the consciousness, the Kavanah, of the morning blessings, the 18 blessings. We won't cover all 18 because the Kavanot is very extensive. But those 18 blessings settle your soul into your body in the morning. Do you have to say the 18 blessings every morning? No, you don't. What happens if you do? You're going to find yourself in a more balanced state. Don't believe a word I say. But find out about it. And then just practice it and decide for yourself whether I'm full of crap or it's true. For me, it's true. I know people that say I'm full of crap.
Well, we don't think that.
Well, I appreciate that. But even if you did, it would be okay.
You can always take a pill.
That's what you have to understand. I'm sorry, please go ahead.
I said you can always take a pill.
Yes, you can take a pill if you want temporary relief. But you can't take a pill for colon cancer. You can't take a pill for a broken arm. You can take it for the pain. But somebody has to set the bone, don't they?
Right.
Or do they? Won't the bone heal by itself if it's not set?
Yes.
It will, yes. They won't heal properly. Or at least that's what the doctors have taught us. Next Monday, we will have at 5 o'clock in the morning, we'll have our second class in the Sefer Yetzirah series. And at 8:30 p.m., we'll have our second class in the Four Phases series. I wish you all a beautiful evening.
Thank you.
Any final questions before I wish to hang up?
Did you get to Sacramento?
Next Monday I'll be in Sacramento.
Okay.
I tried to just see how I could do all the two classes. Next week I'll do the three classes.
Mm-hmm.
Have a beautiful evening.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.